Welcome back to the Sunday Night Health Show. Maureen McGrath hosting this program for you. Thank you so much for being here with me. We're going to be talking about a very sensitive subject right now. One in six couples has difficulty with fertility, with when they go to try and have a baby. But it's not always couples that seek the services of Dr. Neve Tallon, who is the co-director at the Olive Fertility Center, and she joins me here in studio. Good evening, Dr. Tallon.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So there has been an upsurge in a particular type of client, shall we say, that is presenting at the Olive Fertility Center dealing with fertility issues. Can you tell me a little bit about that
surge? Right. So in 2013, we saw approximately 170 women on their own looking to learn more about their own fertility. And last year we saw over 600. So it just, you know, echoes to what's happening now, which is that women are really empowered to know more and be educated more about their own fertility. And they're looking to build their families on their own often. And they look at what kind of information we can give them. And they deem whether they want to do that on their own, maybe with using anonymous donor sperm to try and conceive right away. Or maybe they're looking at just setting aside some of their younger eggs today in the hopes that if they meet a partner down the road, that maybe they'll need these younger eggs because they will be older and have a lower likelihood of achieving a pregnancy easily, you know, at a later advanced age.
And at what age are women coming in to, say, freeze their eggs? And I imagine it's because they haven't met the right person.
It varies dramatically. You know, if we are very dogmatic about it, we'll say the best person to freeze their eggs is someone under the age of 38 because, you know, it's hard over 38 to get a reasonable number of eggs to give you a reasonable odds of attaining a live birth in the future. You know, all of this is where we sit with that individual and we do testing of her, what we call ovarian reserve, and we look at what quantity of eggs she has left. Her age deems the quality of those eggs. And in there, we're able to give them an estimate of what the likelihood of conception would be if they did a cycle of egg freezing and set some eggs aside. Again, there is never a guarantee with that. There wouldn't be a guarantee today if you sat in front of me and you said, like, I want to achieve a pregnancy with one round of treatment. Well, unfortunately, you know, you're dealing with limited numbers of eggs from a given treatment cycle and the quality of those eggs varies. So you never know. What we do know is the more treatment cycles that women do or couples do, the closer they get to success. So it's all about having a greater quantity and the best quality you can. So if you look at this window of fertility that we talk about and, you know, we say your fertility declines rapidly over 38. Well, if you come in under 38, hopefully you can set aside, you know, the better quality eggs. But we do freeze eggs for older women once they're well informed and they understand on the risks of that for them.
Right. And so is it better for a woman to come in at age 30, for example? I mean, is this the gift that mothers should give to their 30-year-old daughters?
You know, I would say we see more women at a younger age and we tell them not to freeze their eggs often because it's those women who have a good fertility and look the average for what they should look like at their age that we say, you know what, you often still have some time. But there's no question the younger the egg that is frozen does better in the long run. But the flip side is whether or not you'll need to use them. Like, does every 20-year-old girl need to freeze their eggs? No, she may well meet a partner in her early 30s and have absolutely no trouble with conception at still that reasonable age. But the average age we see of women freezing their eggs is 34. And that again echoes to they're not quite ready yet for whatever reason. Maybe it's not having the correct partner or just not the right circumstances in their life yet.
And is that related to the conventional wisdom that it's best to conceive before age 35 or
correct.
Sort of that biological clock ticks
absolutely.
Away at 35?
It's ticking from our late 20s. It's, mm-hmm. you know, everything is declining from that point. But we still see great success for women doing treatment under the age of 35. Now, on the flip side of that, the average age of a woman coming in and saying, you know what, I'm not going to wait anymore. I just want to get this going and get pregnant on my own. I'm going to do donor inseminations where they purchase donor sperm and we place that inside the uterus at the right time. Well, the average age of that woman is 38, again, signaling to she's at the time in her life where she wants to actually start her family.
Right. And she realizes she may not have the best quality eggs after the age of 38. Do you ever turn anyone away? Women come in far too late? I do remember a woman talking about her fertility issues, and she was 43, and she'd actually never sought treatment for this.
So I would just say we don't turn people away in that, like, I think everybody deserves counseling around their own fertility. They need to understand why maybe we would not encourage them to spend a lot of money on aggressive treatment. If someone feels that they really need to, you know, if they understand and have appropriate counseling, that's okay for them to attempt treatment. But over the age of 45, we do consider treatment using a woman's own eggs, you know, not really a great idea. The likelihood of a live birth is very, very small at that point in time. But there are other alternative options at that point. We talk about, you know, looking at donor eggs from younger women. And that is much more frequently done now for women over the age of 45. But just to say, women in their 40s do conceive. It's not like they don't.
They do.
And this is about trying to find the women that are, you know, in their younger years, looking like they're at the tail end already of where they are for their reproductive life. And so sometimes we can identify that with testing. We can never say that someone will not ever conceive, and we are not able to say that someone will surely conceive in the future either. It is really trying to give them the greatest, you know, a probability of where they stand, and to allow them then to make the best decisions for where they are in the life.
Okay. Well, like many middle class educated professional women, Natasha, who joins us on the line, was unable to find a mate that she wanted to have a child with. Hello, Natasha.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your story.
Yeah.
So tell me about your 30s. What were you up to in your 30s?
Well, basically, like so many of my friends, I was, building my career, but also actively looking for a partner to build a family. And that's always been something I wanted and strive for. And I just wasn't having any luck. And I was trying really hard.
And then what was the gift you gave to yourself on your 40th birthday?
Well, I actually decided to have a baby on my own. And I made that decision I began that journey when I was 37, when I decided to freeze my eggs. And so I made sure at that moment that I would have that option. And at 40, it was time. So I was ready to start my own family. And I got some good advice and that person said, you can be your own family. You don't have to wait for Mr. Right. And that's exactly what I did. So I had an embryo and a donor sperm. And a gentleman that I picked, sort of like online shopping, and my best friend and my brother and my mother also agreed he was the right guy. And then I was able to conceive this September. And ironically, I did have a boyfriend at the time who knew what I was doing, and he ended up being the father of the child, and the baby was born May 29th. So it's like an amazing story.
Congratulations.
But I don't want that to be the moral of the story, which
right.
is make your own family and then the guy comes. But this is what happened.
Oftentimes, though, when people are trying to conceive and they, you know, are stressed and they decide to give up and they decide to adopt a baby, then all of a sudden they become pregnant. I'm going to ask you to hang on the line. We're going to go to break because I do want to talk about shopping for the donor. Yes, I realize that you found a real live one, but I want to know what it was that you looked for in that sperm. Yeah. I'm Maureen McGrath, and you're listening to the Sunday Night Health Show. Welcome back to the Sunday Night Health Show. Maureen McGrath here. My guest is Dr. Neve Tallon. She's co-director at Olive Fertility Center in Vancouver, British Columbia. We are talking about the pain and heartache and the process of when fertility causes you issues in life. And Natalie is on the line, and she is sharing her story. She was got to the age of 40 after having saved her eggs and decided that she was going to go this parenting thing on her own. And Natalie, thanks for staying on the line.
No problem.
Dr. Talens, thank you for staying here. I'd like to talk to both of you about this kind of shopping. I always talk to people about, you know, they'll say if they want to meet somebody, and you said you were pining away in your 30s for Mr. Right. And
yeah.
And so people will say, you know, I have a list. I have a type. And I say, well, you know, ditch the type, you know, because it's actually about chemistry. It's not really, you know, you may say I am attracted to tall, brunette, you know, moderate weight, you know, stocky, whatever. But you might meet somebody who's, you know, short and, you know, blonde and bald and whatever, anyway, and fall in love. So when you're searching for your donor, your sperm donor, essentially, what was it that you were looking for?
Well, you said pining away. I was actually doing more than pining, because everyone's always giving you advice and I was actively following it. So everyone was always saying, like, you need to get out there. You need to, you know, go on online dating, and you need to take every auntie's recommendation for someone else's, you know, son that you should go on a date with, that sort of thing. So I was really well-versed in giving everyone a chance and going, yes, chemistry, or, you know, oh, he meets all my criteria and all that. So I spent about 10 years doing absolutely all the right things and still not meeting Mr. Right. And so when it came time to meeting my donor, I basically decided I was going to go with someone I was attracted to. So what he looked like. So that's easy. You know, I saw pictures. It's sort of like, you know, shopping for something, like I like that dress or I like those shoes. That's easy. And then there's actually a lot of information provided when you look for a donor, probably more than an actual person that you're meeting online or at a bar or something. So you get a ton of information. And what really got me about the donor that I ended up choosing was not only his stunning looks, and he was also young and very fit and all of those sort of health criteria, but I really loved his essay, and it was so moving and made me cry. And it just touched my heart, and it was just so earnest. And so that met all my criteria right there. Plus, it helped that he had a father who was a lawyer, just like I did, and that kind of pushed me over the edge a little. And then I was also looking for someone of the same ethnic background and someone that kind of looked like me, so that my child would definitely look like my people.
Okay. I'd love to hear a little bit more about what he said in that letter, because I'm sure a lot of guys out there are like, what is it? What do I have to say? What does Ernest look like? Was there one line that you remember? That
he just really wanted to help.
Okay.
And so that's what really touched me. But also, he just seemed like a really nice person. And also, these are special people that are donating their sperm. They don't get paid very much. I think it's very nominal. It's quite a lot of work. And so I felt like, yeah, his essay was just so kind. Like, he really wanted to help someone conceive, or I'm assuming this guy helped many conceive because he was so gorgeous. And
are they most popular? Do they vote most popular at the clinic? He's, you know what? He's not what I would have chosen. But anyway, that's a different story. Dr. Talen, what's some of the information that patients can get, or clients can get? What is some of the information that is shared about these sperm donors?
So, like Natalie said, there's a picture often on their profile. Sometimes it's a baby picture, something. Sometimes it's an adult photo. You'll see, you know, height, eye color, you know, all of that descriptive stuff. In terms of family history or medical history, you know, when the donor is presenting at a distributor, most distributors are in Ontario, and where they would present and they would be screened there. And so in that regard, they asked for a family history. And if they're, you know, they say, you know, there's heart disease or stroke or whatnot, it really ends there. Ethnicity is important because certain ethnic subgroups can carry greater risk of carrier diseases, like cystic fibrosis. With a Celtic background would be a high rate of that, or Ashkenazi Jewish groups carry certain specific metabolic diseases at a greater frequency than the general population. So that stuff is important, because then the person choosing to purchase that donor sperm, if they really like them, they can actually undergo carrier screening, what we call looking for genetics diseases that maybe lay silent. They don't carry the disease themselves, they carry a mutation, but if it was mixed, if they conceived with a donor that also had the same silent mutation, they could have a child that's affected. So that's important. That kind of information is important. When we meet with patients initially who are looking at doing inseminations using donor sperm, we do recommend strongly reproductive counseling, which really comes from Health Canada. Again, safeguarding and ensuring for, you know, children that are conceived using any donor gametes, whether that be eggs or sperm, that, you know, parents are aware of what that means for that child. And so there's counseling ahead of time around, you know, there's a donor sibling registry where you can log on. You can actually put in the donor's information. You can log your child's information. And so other people could also log on and look at the same donor and see if they're half siblings, you know, in the vicinity or for your child. So your right. child conceived with that donor would know if they had half siblings.
And so you want to stay away from something like that potentially. Is that?
No. That is actually to benefit offspring who've been conceived with donor sperm so that they could be aware if they have half siblings out there from and linked through the
Does
donor.
Does that not cause some troubles in the marriage and the family and the relationship though? Might that not open up a whole new can of worms?
You know, it's really on parents as to whether or not they disclose to their children conceived in this way. But, you know, we encourage that in that, you know, it's the honesty is always the right way to go. And these counseling sessions often give some tools and tips on the age appropriateness of disclosure and how you would go about that with your child. Mm-hmm. It would be, for example, you know, there are children conceived within same-sex couples where it would be obvious to other children in the class that perhaps there wasn't a female or mm-hmm. a male parent within right. there. And you would probably like to address that yourself as parents before another child within the class did, you know. And it's really about right. safeguarding your child and mm-hmm. having them be able to address all those issues.
Right, but would all, you know, say this gorgeous guy, Natalie, that you chose, say he's, you know, chosen by, you know, 10 women in a particular subdivision out there.
Which can happen.
That can cause a problem. mm-hmm. And so, you know, a lot of, we keep secrets. We don't necessarily tell. I mean, I know honesty is the best policy.
Right. And again, these distributors who, you know, you would purchase a donor unit from, a unit being a straw of sperm, do put the onus back on the people purchasing sperm to make them aware as to whether or not there's been a family unit created from that sample. Mm-hmm. And they do limit the number of family units for
they
a given
do.
Donor.
They oh,
do.
Good.
And that yeah. has been, you know, it's still a large number. It's like 300.
Wow.
Like
yeah, that is a lot. Interesting. The first test tube baby turns 40. Louise Brown
That's
is
right.
40 a couple of days ago. Natalie, you have a upcoming nuptials coming. I'm curious, did the guy in the picture, the sperm donor, does he look like your future husband?
He absolutely does, and we just get tickled pink because people in our neighborhood say to him or say to me, like, geez, your son looks so much like your fiance, a little bit like you, but mostly like your fiance, and we just think this is awesome. And, well, of course, you know, I do have a type, so he actually does look a lot like Philip.
Well, you chose well twice.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Well, you know, ultimately, it's what's inside, and I said, yeah. you know, I said to my family, I said, I hope he's just like Philip. Mostly on the inside, you know, it doesn't really matter what he looks like on the outside, but I chose well and I got lucky and found a really kind man.
You sure did.
A good man. So
yeah.
that's all that matters.
You sure did. And you sound like
yeah.
such a lovely person. I really appreciate you sharing your story because I think
Thank
when
you.
We share our stories, we empower other women and girls and families. And Dr. Neve Tallon, co-director at Olive Fertility Center, what is the best way for people to get in touch with you and where can they find out more information if they're wondering about seeking parenthood by themselves perhaps or,
yes.
or not or with a partner, with another person?
So the process usually begins with seeing a family doctor, whether that be your own general practitioner or a walk-in clinic, and you ask for a referral mm-hmm. for a fertility assessment. And from there, we would assess, we would put all the testing in place to ensure that they had appropriate counseling.
And that's olivefertility.com?
That's olivefertility.com.
Olivefertility.com. So if you want to have a baby, all the single ladies, all the single ladies. Anyway, I meant to play that song earlier, but you got my voice. I'm sorry about that. I am Maureen McGrath. It is always a pleasure to have such great guests in the studio, and it's an honor to have you listening to my show, The Sunday Night Health Show.